Ian Bick is on. Boy, what a life you've had.
Yeah.
So far, you're not even 30.
No, I'm 27. Yeah.
You're 27.
27, yeah.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
Right. So let's start with the club that you owned. That was in Danbury?
Yeah, it was called Tuxedo Junction.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's quite a famous club.
That was an awesome club.
Very famous.
I've been there, yeah.
That was your club.
Yeah, so I took it over from the previous owners.
Cool.
It went out of business in 2013, and I took over the front room. And
how old were you?
I was 18.
Nice. You're 18 years old. Wow. 18. How do you get the money to do this?
Well, there was nothing to buy because the club was going out of business.
So you just took it over.
I just took it over, but the first part of the club.
All right, I've heard of these things before. There's always a lease thing where you're not paying. So you walk in, you open the club, and now you're not paying someone, right?
No, I mean, I paid a rent. I had to pay rent to the landlord, but I paid a lot of. I paid the first club I owned, a part of Tuxedo Junction, was called Sky Bar, and I paid $100,000 to renovate it.
Wow!
How old were you then?
18.
Where'd you come up with that money?
Paper sale.
So I had it.
Cupcakes. You were selling chicken wings on the side.
Right. Chicken wings.
I had an investment company that did like concerts, electronics, a bunch of different stuff.
When did you start your business? Like two?
My first business started when I was 15. I started throwing teen parties in high school.
Okay.
And I can
AJ
make like
still does that.
Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
That could be a crime.
Dave,
you want to be careful.
Dave, let's not talk about that, Dave. You said you wouldn't bring that up, Dave.
I like how the guy who's out of federal prison said that could be a crime.
he's gonna tell me which.
I actually bumped the people who've done that.
He's gonna tell me which cell is the best one to have.
I got a ramen recipe.
Yeah. You're gonna love dinner on Thursdays.
Were your parents business people? Where did this come from?
My dad owns a catering company.
Great.
So I got exposed to entertainment and event planning at a very young age. It was like 7th or 8th grade that I started helping him plan events.
Good for you.
Nice.
Okay. Then you're doing high school parties. The next thing, you're buying a club. Were you working at the club before then?
I just did teen parties at the club in high school.
Okay.
That's how
so
I established a relationship.
Then it closed, and you're like, hey, this could be an opportunity. Right. You jump in and you do it.
Right.
Yep.
Wow. And I didn't know you could, were you the permittee of the club?
So the first club I owned, which was Sky Bar, for 6 months we had a provisional license, and that was through the old owners that were still staying on board to help, like, consult. Not exactly legal to do that,
right?
But that's how it went down. And then
exactly legal.
Not exactly
legal. Which means illegal.
I mean, there's like loopholes.
It's unlegal.
Did you break the law? Not exactly.
I mean, technically, I didn't break the law in that scenario, but you know, other people may or may not have.
Right.
And but then when that folded after 6 months, because it could never turn a profit or kind of recoup our initial investment, I opened up the back room. And combined it all three rooms because Tuxedo Junction's divided into three rooms.
Yeah.
And I turned that into a venue for electronic dance music, and that had no liquor. And you could make like $15,000 a night off of water and soda because our markups, we were charging $5 or $6
Everybody's
for a bottle of water.
To get thirsty. Yeah.
And the ecstasy in the bathrooms,
right,
too.
Yes. I mean, I didn't sell drugs.
You were part of that. That was a separate entity. Yeah, exactly. No. It was not involved.
I never got into drugs or anything like that. I was
good
very,
for you.
Yeah.
You know, you're making money. That's why.
Yeah. Wow.
You never got caught.
No. No drugs.
$15,000 a night. And how old are you? 18 at this point?
18. At the peak of it, I'm 19. At the big peak when we were doing like the really, really big acts.
How many nights a week is that?
We were open like 3 or 4 times a month. It was
a month.
Yeah, my business concept was you book the big acts where it would a revenue could be $100,000, $110,000 in one night. But some nights you could lose 50 or 60,000 in a night, and you can make 50 or 60,000 at the high risk.
What's your dad thinking as this is going on? His catering business couldn't have been something like this, and here you are 18 making all this money.
Well, he actually made more money than me at one point because he was doing like a lot of celebrity stuff. He was doing stuff for the presidents. I grew up going to like the Harry Potter premieres. I got to go to all like
all right, so we're gonna have you back and talk about that then.
Yeah,
because that's a whole another deal. We're focusing on you today.
Yeah.
Ian Bick is on, and he owned Tuxedo Junction. There's an HBO thing on him now.
Cool.
This is his, and he's not even 30, and
nice.
This is his life.
Wow.
So how do you go from making all this money, owning Tuxedo Junction, having successful parties, to being in federal prison? Are those two things connected?
So Tuxedo Junction was never connected to the actual criminal case.
Okay.
I had a business, like this investment electronic business, before I ever even owned the club. And that's what's tied to the criminal case aspect of it.
Okay. So you were running both businesses at the same time?
When I opened Tuxedo Junction, the first business was folded because at that point, that's when the federal investigation started. Okay. And I was started Tuxedo Junction while under investigation.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
well, you had to make money for the
wow.
Well, I'm trying to pay back the investors through this club, and it's like the last, you know, hurrah. And so that's the craziest part about my story is that I'm 19, the FBI, the IRS, all these criminal divisions are after me, and I'm owning this nightclub against all odds and making it work.
Wow.
Wow. What was it like your first time in front of IRS or FBI? Did they see you and say, okay, where's your dad?
Yeah, right. This can't be him.
Yeah.
You're in the wrong office.
Right.
Did you lose your mommy and daddy?
My very first meeting was at the Department of Banking. Didn't know we had a Department of Banking in Connecticut, in Hartford. And postal inspectors, which I didn't know there was such thing as postal inspectors, they came, they showed their badges, and then I sat with them without a lawyer for like 5 or 6 hours. And I told them like the whole story because I was just, at that time I was 18, and I was just trying to, you know, explain what happened.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't intentional and this and that.
That turned out to be a mistake. Right?
Yes, that was a big mistake.
Your lawyer trained you good after that.
Yeah,
I know a lot about like the law in court now, but there was a lot of mistakes I made early on in like the investigation that didn't help me whatsoever.
Well, you're thinking, I didn't do anything wrong. I just want to just tell them everything so they know why all this happened.
Yeah, there's no bad intentions.
And they're
going
to say, pay these guys back and you could go on your way.
Right, right.
By the way, nice job.
I would have thought the same thing. But this is what I do.
I'm sure they were very friendly in the interrogation.
Oh, they gave me their cell phone number. They said, hey, do you want a donut? Like, they were just and they were blowing up my phone right after. And right away, I got a lawyer, like, the second I walked out of the room. And then I just, like, blocked them, and they weren't happy about that.
Yeah, when you find a wire in your donut, wait a minute. What's this chip?
That's an amazing story, Ian Bick. Owned Tuxedo Junction, then federal investigation, ends up in a federal prison. Wow, federal. So what were they accusing you of?
The final charges were wire fraud, money laundering, and making a false statement to those postal inspectors at that meeting. Yeah, they charged me for that.
Ooh.
Did you make a false statement?
No, I was found not guilty on it. The jury wasn't too happy that like they didn't give me a chance to like get a lawyer and just like the facts of what my statements were wasn't like an intentional lie. It all depended on what like viewpoint it was looked at, so it didn't substantiate a lie.
So you got a good lawyer.
He was good. The only problem with these criminal cases is it's one lawyer against an unlimited army with unlimited
funds.
The
government has, they'll throw whatever money they want.
Arsenal,
yeah. There's no. It's very hard to win at that point.
What did you not exactly do that was they said that was against the law? The wire fraud. What was that?
Essentially, the wire fraud is, so say, like, you gave me $20 to go to McDonald's, and I took your $20 using, like, a debit card or a Venmo or a wire transfer or a check or anything like that, and I went to Burger King and bought Burger King with that money. So it's like making a false statement and, like, conducting fraud because you're not giving, like, the investor or the lender what you're telling them you're supposed to be giving them.
Wow. Is that what was happening?
Well, tough and fast.
A little bit.
So in my case, like I think the biggest thing where I went wrong is I was a terrible communicator and I wasn't honest. Like after, so I raised a bunch of money at a really young age, perfectly
now,
legit.
Terrible communicator. Is that code for like liar?
Well, I was saying both. Yeah.
I'm using that from now on. I'm sorry.
I was going to say it exactly.
I love you, man. I didn't exactly break the law. Just a terrible communicator.
Even after.
T-shirt says that.
Hey, that's not 12 inches. I'm sorry. I'm a terrible communicator.
Right.
I mean, even after the lies started, though, like I wasn't communicating well. Like when I say terrible communicator, I didn't ever come forward and say, hey, this is what really happened. Let's do this, and this.
What, to the investors?
Yeah, to anyone.
Okay.
Even investors or even like police, like when I first started talking to them, like I was very non-confrontational and I didn't want to get involved in anything. And I think that hurt me because I started off very legit doing the teen nights. I raised like $120,000 in seed money and capital my senior year of high school. That was all legit.
Okay, so that money, you didn't earn and then squirrel away. You raised it because your parties were so successful. You went to investors and said, hey, we're going to make even more money.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm in. Then how did that go?
They had the best prom ever.
Yeah. So
you said it went,
no.
You said it went under.
Is that the Dan Halen plane?
You said the business went under, and then you opened Tuxedo Junction to try to pay those people back.
So my business was it's a high-risk business. We raised that money and put it into concerts at college campuses, arenas, nightclubs, things like that. And we had other partners involved because obviously one startup company can't go and produce like these giant, you know, rap shows or EDM shows at these colleges. And what happened was the first show lost money and I lied to cover up those losses. And that's when it's like a snowball effect. So once you tell one lie, it's like a domino effect.
Yeah.
And
you
have to keep it up. Yeah. So there's like a 7 or 8 month period of time where between that first loss and when everything finally ends, where I'm lying, taking money, lying, this and that. So that's like the fraud aspect of it.
So you get investigated. It doesn't go well. What were you sentenced?
My sentence was 36 months and then 3 years supervised release with 1 year of home confinement when I got out.
36 months. How much of that time did you do?
I did about 27 months inside. I was in like 5 or 6 different federal prisons. I had like a really crazy prison story. And then I went to a halfway house in Waterbury for like 5 months. And then all together under like the federal system, I did like 31 months. And then the other 5 months.
What was the scary or part of that story, the staying in federal prison or the halfway house in Waterbury?
The halfway house in Waterbury.
Waterbury is the worst.
Just someone's house in Waterbury.
No, if I had to go back, I would choose to not go to the halfway house and just stay in. You're way more comfortable in the prison camp than you are at the halfway house. It's designed so you don't succeed.
Uh-huh.
What was that first day like going into federal prison? How old were you, 21?
I was 21 just a few months after my 21st birthday, and I was going to the detention center in Rhode Island. It was like the Wyatt Detention Center. That's a private facility because we don't really have like county prisons in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So that's where they take federal inmates that are waiting because my bond had gotten revoked. I was going out of state to gamble at the casino. And they found out about it, and
you are a bad communicator.
Yeah. That was bad. I was bad communicating to my probation officer at the time. So.
Oh wow! And that was so you were trying to get that money back through gambling.
At one point, gambling was like fueling me paying the artists because you know in the entertainment business, you don't pay the artists, you get blacklisted. There's no nightclub, so I would literally go and play baccarat on the electronic table.
Oh man.
And
this feels a little like a junior version of Bernie Madoff, no?
Maybe not with the gambling, but I guess the Ponzi scheme aspect, yeah.
Yeah, well, that, yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And
yeah.
A better haircut.
He wasn't, I never saw Bernie Madoff at the casino, but he was figuring out a way to just play shuffleboard with the money,
is that
the
Bernie?
Shell game.
Right, literally shuffleboard, yes.
So that first day, that has to be terrifying.
It really didn't hit me until like a couple days later. I was just like in shock because I was so cocky and had a big ego that I never expected to go to prison. Like I just thought I was on top of the world because I had so many wins previously. So when I was there, you know, it really hit me pretty hard. I didn't want to eat for a couple days.
Oh.
I was in the cell, like you're locked in a cell for the first couple days because you have to get tested for TB, all these different types of things, go through intake. And I was with, like, this guy that was just coming off a high, and he was, like, spazzing out in the cell the whole time, and it just wasn't good.
Great.
Now you're like, what the hell? Then you start thinking, okay, one day. Yeah. I have 36 more months to go.
And then he's thinking, am I going to be the husband or the wife?
Yeah. Were you in there with any famous people or business people?
Yeah, a couple famous people. I was there with Joe Gittis or whatever that guy's last name is that was married to Teresa from The Real Housewives.
Yeah.
I was with him at Fort Dix. And then I would say the most interesting
one. I hate that name for a prison.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
And then
a strong one.
The most interesting one was George Papadopoulos from Donald Trump's crew or whatever.
Yeah.
We were all trying to take pictures of him to sell to TMZ. He was only there for 13 days at the camp, and TMZ was outside every single one of those days. So everyone's like sitting trying to take photos of him in the library at the camp because there's like so many contraband cell phones.
Yeah.
And they never ended up buying any photos, but
damn it.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow. So you get out, and then HBO at some point says, let's do something on you.
Yeah, it was like 10 months later. I had just gotten like my life together. I got a corporate job at Whole Foods, and I was working my way up in the company. I got a car in my name, an apartment, all these things, and that's when I got a DM from an intern at HBO Max that said, hey, you know, we're doing this series. We'd love for you to be a part of it. I went through an interview process, didn't hear anything for like 4 or 5 months, and then I got a call randomly saying it's greenlit and we want to talk to you.
And we can see this on HBO Max now?
It's off HBO now because they merged with Discover, so they got rid of like a lot of their content.
Oh, bummer.
But
where can we see it?
So I have the direct link. Normally I just have people like DM me on Instagram,
right,
and then I'll send them the link. But
so
happy to send it to you guys.
Just kidding. No, you should.
And then there's a really good Vice documentary on YouTube. That's only like 10 or 11 minutes long, but they do a good job at kind of like piecing together the story in that time.
Oh, that's cool. I want to see that.
Yeah, that's on YouTube. That has just about 3 million hits right now.
And your podcast is hugely successful. What's the name of that?
So the podcast is called Locked In with Ian Bick. And it's really a unique concept. We're basically taking in, because the prison TikTok world is huge. It's a 2.8 billion market of people that view it. So we're taking the biggest creators and these stories of people that went to prison, but awesome, ultimately turn it around and come out on top.
Cool.
And that is like inspiration to people that may or may not have been to prison or they're going through any tough times in their life.
That's great.
So that's what like this podcast is about.
That's awesome.
Good for you. We're going to link up all your stuff on the radio station website. Then we're going to get you back to talk about, man, this is a very, we can't do it in two breaks.
No.
Yeah,
no.
He's got a lot going on.
We need more time here.
Ian Bick, thank you for coming on.